What does walking down the cereal aisle in the supermarket have to do with our economy or our property markets? What does the Uber Eats app, you know, the one that so many of us have gotten used to, what's that got to do with the skills shortage? Well, in today's episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, I chat with leading demographer Simon Kirstenmacher, who uses a number of food metaphors to explain what's happening in our economy. So if you're a lover of food, as I am, and more importantly, if you're interested in property or business, I'm sure you're going to get some great insights from my chat with Simon. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know I love digging into demographic changes, the things that are going to affect our economy and our property markets. But in this month's chat with leading demographer Simon Kirstenmacher, director of the Demographics Group, we're going to look at some significant factors you need to understand to be a successful property investor or a business person, but we're going to look at them in a different way. Welcome, Simon.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Now, Simon, I enjoy reading your weekly columns in the New Daily Weekend Edition, but recently you brought up a number of interesting food metaphors, and you know me well enough to know that food interests me, but you were really discussing some of the challenges Australia is currently facing. So let's start with one of them, the upcoming skills shortage Australia could be facing. Now, you're right about it when you gave an analogy to Uber Eats, an app that Pam and I use, well, once a week now, but during COVID, I think we were using it more than that. I think we'd be lost without it now. So maybe you could explain what you were getting at.
Oh, absolutely. The Australian economy got quite a bit like you and Pam got hooked on Uber Eats. And what I mean by this metaphor is that the Australian economy, if there was a skills shortage, some sort of job that the economy needed, let's say we needed more nurses, more doctors, and that we couldn't produce in the country itself because we needed so many of them, we just put it on the Uber Eats app, which is called in technical terms, the skilled occupations list. And then people from overseas with those specific qualifications who are trained nurses or trained doctors, they can come into the country simply because they have the qualification, meaning we get the skilled migrants that we need delivered to our doorstep, a very, very convenient way of growing an economy. The problem here was, however, that the Uber Eats app stopped working. We closed our borders. We couldn't order in skilled migrants from overseas. That wasn't a problem for quite a while, since Australia was, of course, fearing high unemployment during the lockdowns. And so we could feed all the demand for new jobs from the unemployed people, from the young people that just finished their trade certificates, their university degrees, their high school degrees. So that worked out for quite a while. And so the unemployment rate never reached, you know, double digits as some people feared. It's actually quite the opposite by now, that we are slowly inching towards what we might be calling full employment. And I always say I leave it to the economists to fight over whether a rate of 5% or whether a rate of maybe 4% should be considered full employment. But once you have an economy under full employment, it means that when a new job comes up, there is no way to fill this job because there are no skilled, qualified workers out there. And what usually happens in a situation like this is that you then need to snatch workers from a different job. And that usually happens through wage growth, meaning you just pay more for these specific skills. And there will be a skills shortage because these companies and players that can't pay the higher wages, they just can't get the relevant staff member in their organization. But the good news here is that this should, at least intellectually speaking, should lead to wage growth, which is something well needed in Australia.
Well, the Reserve Bank was forecasting unemployment to reach the middle fives next year. It's already reached it this year. And we've had that interesting V-shaped recovery that nobody thought we'd have in our economy so far as well. So that's great. Full employment, well, really, it's not as much employment, but it's also related to the participation rate and how you measure employment. Because there are some interesting measures where if you only work 1 or 2 hours a week, you're not really unemployed, are you?
Correct. So this is where we dive into the statistical nitty-gritty. But the important thing so far is that the decline in the unemployment rate this time around is not linked because anybody fudges with the statistical definitions of what unemployment means or whatnot. This has been an issue a couple of years back in the US when people really just changed definitions and then unemployment looks a bit more rosy than it actually was. This is not the case. We actually have lots of areas of the economy already where we have massive skills shortages. I'm thinking of the tourism and hospitality sectors in particular. These are sectors that traditionally in many areas of the country heavily relied on backpackers, on work and travel visa holders that would fill those, specifically those seasonal surges. And that's not available at the moment. So we do know we live in Melbourne and in Sorrento on the peninsula, a very popular tourism or day tripper hotspot. The cafes can't staff all their workers. So it's a real problem where work is not available.
It's very much a problem in regional Australia too, which is very dependent upon tourism. They can't get the people to take the jobs. So as you suggested, one way of doing that is to increase wages. If I can't find a worker at $25 an hour, that's okay. I'll just offer $30 an hour. But that doesn't work for anyone and everyone, does it? Especially that little bakery in the regional town who's looking for an experienced pastry chef. They can't increase their wages by 20%, 25% and still survive.
No, and even if they were to raise their wages significantly, if you are the only bakery in a small tourist town and you need a pastry chef and you pay $30 instead of 22, 25, that doesn't mean that therefore magically a pastry chef will emerge in your town because there's no qualified worker in your town. So you would actually need to snatch them up from a different town, probably from the large capital city next door. But then you reach the problem, how does this individual pastry chef learn about your job opening? Then, well, is this, you know, relatively low-paid job actually worth the effort of unrooting your family, of moving to a new town? And, well, even if this was the case, does this new regional town of yours, does it actually have an affordable rental market?
Yeah.
Because you're not going to buy yourself into a new town immediately. You're going to need an affordable rental. And we do know that in regional Australia, this is very much at short supply at the moment.
So while big companies can afford to relocate their staff, people in a higher tax bracket, big companies with bigger budgets, I can see this being an issue in regional Australia moving forward.
And it's such a shame that it hits the regional centres as well, because they would see so many benefits from growing their population a bit. And it is a real opportunity for regional Australia at the moment to grow their population base and their economies. But we do see that the regional housing markets can't keep up. And we're not talking about insane population surges in those small towns. If in a small town you have 20, 50 families more than usual moving into in a year's time, there's absolute shortage in every corner of the market. So it doesn't mean, you know, overflooded, overrun towns when we talk about housing shortages in regional Australia.
Simon, it's not just those small group of families moving to regional Australia, but it's also the lack of people leaving regional Australia to go to the big smoke. Why would you leave regional Victoria to go to Melbourne where you could be caught with lockdown and COVID? So therefore, it's a combination of two factors that have buoyed the economies and the property markets of regional Australia.
Oh, absolutely. If we put ourselves into the shoes of a young person in regional Australia that is just finishing year 12, it's less attractive this time around to go to a capital city, particularly Melbourne, where you can't have the standard university experience of going out, getting drunk, being merry, where you can't have this guaranteed. So if university is still largely taking place online, why bother getting into an expensive rental in the CBD? You just maintain in your town and you hang out there for another year. while you do remote learning. Or maybe even you try to move out of your parental house still and find a rental in your regional hometown. And then that puts further stress on the housing market in that town.
So Australia went from fearing high unemployment, remember they were saying 10%, 12%, double-digit unemployment, to actually facing a national skills shortage. But that could in turn slow down our economic recovery.
Exactly. We are almost the victims of our own success. This V-shaped recovery, which was viewed as one of the theoretical possibilities a couple of months back, but as probably the most unlikely one, has become reality. Mm. And in times of economic growth, you do need more workers. And these workers can't be found. So, the government made all the right moves by putting so much infrastructure into the infrastructure pipeline. They brought forward so many projects. There are billions of dollars being made available for infrastructure projects. But we can only build them if we have people to build them. And that's actually where the big opportunity lies here, socially speaking, because we can't import those workers from somewhere else. So we need to upskill our low-skilled workers, people who are kind of stuck in the gig economy type jobs where you're being paid by the gig, by the kilometer, by the hour, where the only way to earn more money is to work longer hours. And that's what you want to avoid as a career. It's okay when you're young and you do this temporarily, but you don't want too many people relying on these jobs to bring up their families. And if we do things right, we can get these low-skilled workers into middle-skilled trades type of jobs so that they can then build all the infrastructure that is being brought forward. And to do this, we need to get them through TAFEs, which leads me to this super important role that TAFEs will play for our economy in the near future. Therefore, TAFEs, in my opinion, must be universally free. We must take away all the hurdles that people might experience to go to a TAFE. It must be very, very easy because we cannot afford to not upskill tens of thousands of people really quickly.
So one of the ways one can have a better GDP, improve your economy, is becoming more productive. And that's one of the things that you're saying, that we actually should be better skilled and produce more. And I like the way in your article, you still brought it back to a food metaphor where you said, Australia needs to get baking again.
Yes.
So we're baking more skilled workers.
We need to bake the workers ourselves because we already raided the pantry. That's the unemployment workforce that was available. We raided them. Now we need to start baking at an industrial kitchen scale, if you will.
I love your metaphors. Now, independent of your thoughts, the Grattan Institute released a report into Australia's migration policy, and it suggested we should be focusing on increasing the number of young skilled workers by making employment sponsorship available for all workers to actually earn above $80,000 to help boost the economy. The think tank took a swipe at the government, saying it was taking the wrong direction by shifting the composition of permanent skilled people into older, less skilled migrants. It's come up with what we've discussed in previous podcasts, the importance of young skilled workers. Of course, when we reopen our borders.
Of course. Yeah. So, and that's probably a year or two away. But the important thing is to understand how a migrant adds to the economy or any worker adds to the economy. You cost the state money up to the point where you start earning tax, where you earn an income and therefore you create tax income for the state. And then once you are retired and you become old and you rely a bit more on the health system, then again, you cost the state money. But what we do with skilled migrants is we skip the first 18, 20, 25 years where a human costs the state money, and we just have some other state train people for us, and then we utilize their labor. It's a very, very efficient way of adding to the population base, a very cheap way. And ideally, you want to catch these skilled migrants as early in their earning phase of the life cycle as you can. So a 25-year-old skilled migrant is better than a 35-year-old, than a 45-year-old skilled migrant.
Now, Simon, let's look at another one of your food metaphors. You recently wrote an article about strolling up and down the cereal aisle at the supermarket. Now, interestingly, that's not where I go. I like the one next to it where there's the Darylene chocolates and things like that. But what were you on about the cereal aisle?
Oh, this was my metaphor for understanding the consumer market in a society like Australia, where we increasingly have more and more really rich, highly skilled, high income people and more low skilled people on a relatively low income, and actually a shrinking class of middle income workers. So we're hollowing out the workforce. The workforce doesn't look like a bell curve where everybody essentially earns the same amount of money, even though there are a couple of poor people, there are a couple of rich people. This bell curve is a thing of the past. By now, the workforce resembles the letter U, with lots of rich folks, lots of poor folks, and a few people in the middle. And so when I go into the cereal aisle and I look at the benchmark middle-class breakfast of Australia, a box of Weet-Bix, it'll set you back 42 cents per 100 gram, and that's our middle-class benchmark. And you think about it, how does the consumer market react to an Australia where more and more people have to carefully watch every single dollar that they spend? Well, we go to the, you know, to the side of the cereal aisle where we have all those home brand products, the black and gold products, the wheat biscuit type products. And they are much cheaper than Weet-Bix. They're approximately 50% cheaper. And the premise of this product category is pretty clear. We offer you the same utility, a wheaty, healthy breakfast, at a lower price. But what is happening at the Paris end of the cereal aisle? Well, a whole new product category emerges here as well. That's the Weet-Bix protein is out there. It makes you stronger. Weet-Bix organic. It's good for the planet. Weet-Bix kids, I'm sure it's good for something as well.
Yes.
All these products are much more expensive, approximately three times the price. They don't look that much more expensive because they come in very small boxes, but per 100 gram, about three times the price. But the premise of this product category is obvious as well. We offer you a higher utility at a higher price, simply because the highly skilled, high income earners, they don't care whether the cereal costs $5 or $10 or $15 per whatever kilo or whatever they spend. That's okay for them. And I urge in my column, I urge every business, every investor in Australia to understand the Weet-Bix spec, to see, to scan their own product offering, where it fits along the, you know, the Weet-Bix scale. Because if you just target the center, you are only targeting an ever-shrinking middle. It's not a safe bet. You have growth markets at the cheap end of the market and at the top end of the market. At the top end of the market, margins are higher. So it's essentially, it's easier to service the top end of town.
In property, that's the sort of thing we've been talking about for a long time. So the rich are getting richer. And what we're discussing is unfortunately a social argument that has got other problems. It's not for us to solve today, but I don't think we want to lose Australia's middle class. So what you were saying a moment ago about upskilling Australians is a great way of helping, partly fixing that issue.
Absolutely. When I'm showing the workforce looking like a letter U with high income and low income people, no one in the middle, that is the exact shape that you want to avoid because social cohesion is at risk. The rich and the poor, when they don't have meaningful ways of interacting with one another, you just alienate the other. And you create a society where some people envy the others and some people look down upon the others. And that's what you want to avoid. And I'm always saying, if you look at the US, if you look at Brazil, if you look at South Africa, you have case studies out there of countries that operate like this, where there's absolutely no middle class and lots of rich and lots of poor folks. And you don't want this. We want to do whatever we can to strengthen the Australian middle class. And thankfully, we do have at the moment this opportunity to heavily spend on infrastructure to push up the middle class. But in order to do this, we need to be upskilling the low-income workers into the Weet-Bix center of Australia.
Well, another good analogy. Now, of course, we're not making a judge of people, so there's nothing, no judgment about rich or poor being better or worse. It is just a fact. And a lot of it, of course, has to do with your education, the final level of education you've got, the higher the level of education you get to, the more your wages will be over time. But if we bring it back to property, we also realize that as this cycle moves on and as property values increase and when this cycle finishes off, property values will have gone up 25, 30%. Wages will have only gone up a little bit, nothing like that in general. But some people, the skill level one and two workers, are going to have multiple streams of income. Their wages are going to go up more. Some of them are going to be owner-occupiers, others tenants. So we choose to target areas where there's more skill level one and two workers, where there's more established money suburbs, because that's the premium end of the Weet-Bix market as well, because that's where people are going to be able to afford to and prepare to live in those sort of locations. Well, with all this talk about food, Simon, suddenly you've made my shopping trip a little bit more stressful.
I'm very sorry about this. To make it up to you, let's go one aisle further to the left and let's buy some chocolates to make up for it.
Yes, and chocolate always makes up for these problems. So, Simon, thank you very much. I always enjoy our monthly podcast chats. Look forward to catching up with you again real soon.
Fantastic. Catch you soon.
That was an interesting chat with Simon, with some great food metaphors. And in a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you. But before I do, I'd like to give you another way of getting more information about what's happening in the property markets. I've got a bundle of ebooks and reports for you. Just go to podcastbonus.com.au. I'll leave a link in the show notes where you can pick up my way of saying thank you, my little gift to you, a bundle of ebooks and reports. Now, before my mindset message, I'd just like to have a quick chat with you about our rising property markets, because they are performing very strongly. Who would have thought a year ago that we'd be in this position talking about how well our economy is performing and how well our property markets are performing? But don't be lulled into thinking that you can just buy any property and it's going to be an investment. You've heard me say before that any property can be an investment. You just kick out the landlord and put a tenant in, but not every property is investment grade. So to make sure that you take advantage of this current property cycle with the right guidance and direction, why not get my team at Metropole to help you? Go to metropole.com.au and find out a bit about what we do. And by the way, we don't sell properties. So our advice is independent and unbiased. Yet we have a holistic approach because we give strategic property advice. It all starts with putting a plan together for you. And then you may choose to use our buyer's agency, our wealth advisory, property management, renovations, development, financial planning. But you've got access to a wide range of experts. This is part of my multi-award-winning team. Go to metropole.com.au, find out about what we do. Why not discover what your options are and get my team on your side to help even the odds in your favour?
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In today's mindset message today, I'd like to talk about failures. Now, hang on, how does failure fit in with success and motivation? Well, let me explain. I've had more than my share of failures, and if I want to be honest, most of them have been self-inflicted. But I've come to realize that too many people worry about failing. So I think failing is overrated, and I'd like to explain to you, let me give you actually six reasons why I think you shouldn't worry so much about failure. First of all, failing is never permanent. I know that sinking feeling that you get in your tummy. Boy, have I had it more than my share of times. But it doesn't last forever. So the best way to reflect on your failure is to focus on the lessons that you've learned and the person you're going to become, rather than spending time trying to avoid failure. The less time you spend on the rejection, the faster you're going to grow. The second message I'd like to give you about failing is to own up to your own failures, because the moment you openly talk about the things that make you vulnerable, they no longer have the power over you. People will appreciate your honesty because everyone knows what it's like when they've had setbacks, when they've made mistakes. People are going to respect you for owning your own problems and embracing your failures. So when you own up to your own failures, you become stronger. Now, the third message about failures I want to give you is that the world isn't going to change unless you do. Let's be blunt, the world owes you nothing. It was here first, so we can't blame the other shortfalls, the things outside there in our lives, the people around us, or the past decisions for our failures now. It's not the event that defines you, it's how you choose to react. So forget what others say, they're going to judge you anyway. If you want the world to change yourself first. Now, another thought about failure is how badly do you want it, whatever it was that you wanted that didn't work out? Remember, Steve Jobs once cleverly said, if you don't love it, you're going to fail. We have heard about Thomas Edison, who made 1,000 unsuccessful attempts at inventing the light bulb. But from his perspective, I didn't fail 1,000 times, he said. The light bulb was an invention with 1,000 steps. Now, that's a smart way of thinking about it, isn't it? And I think it's important to realize that just because you failed at something doesn't mean that you're a failure. Never let failure deteriorate your own self-worth. If your head hurts, you say, I've got a headache. You don't say, I am a headache. Failure is nothing more than an event. Don't personalize it. And the last message I'd like to give you about failure is it's just part of the process. It happens. The fastest way to succeed is double your failure rate. Successful people have failed more times than a beginner's even tried. You've often heard me say, I'm a real success at failure. So if you want to succeed, fail faster. I bet after today's show, your next stroll down the supermarket aisle won't be exactly the same. Hopefully you'll remember some of the insights Simon and I shared with you. And if you got some benefit from today's show, why not tell somebody else who you think would benefit from it as well? Help me in my quest to make more Australians financially fluent. Just tell them about the Michael Yardney podcast, or why not share a review? Tell the world what you think about it. You can catch me in between these twice weekly shows on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney. And I have a private Facebook group where every day I leave some commentary, some thoughts, usually a chart as well. Go to Facebook and look for the Property Update private Facebook group. And I'd love to have you as part of my community. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropol, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropol to help you?